The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
In with us, we're going to check in with Spurge in a couple of minutes on this Monday about Diamondbacks. Jordan Hamm is on his way to Tucson today. Jordan runs down there when he sees things that are of interest around U of A football and basketball and other sports. I had a tremendous weekend because it was in the 90s. It was in the 90s. Like, the pool is already. I get in there this morning. It's like, this isn't supposed to be until, like, I don't know, March 15th, March 20th. It's beautiful. Just awesome. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. Anything goes wrong on the show today, it's Tysik's fault, not mine. Tysik is chairman of the board. You know, this sports news today, because, look, we all know what's going on in the world. We're at war. So this is, and I've, through the years I've done this, I remember all the way back in the day I was on the air when Desert Storm happened, and they came in, they handed me a old piece of wire copy, and it says bulletin. And they just said, just read it. I'm like, I don't know, 20, 23, I don't know, somewhere there. And so that was interesting. And so you try to balance what is important in the world and then what is going on in the world of fun and games, which this is. Okay, so just that as a backdrop that I can laugh and joke around, but obviously when you have people in harm's way and death and our country is in the midst of a confrontation, you have that, at least I do, in the back of my mind. So Ian Rappaport, how about that for an awkward segue? Ian Rappaport reported from the NFL Network. And when it gets to the point where ESPN or NFL Network insiders are reporting something is happening, it's a heads up by the league to get it out there so they get in on the Monday morning news cycle. So guys like me will bring it up rather than talk about any of the other sports. That's how the NFL operates and works. Kyler Murray likely to be released if a trade doesn't materialize. And, you know, we can parse this any way we want. I think Kyler Murray fatigue, it's like a flu bug going on around here. It's like any sort of disease that you just want to get rid of, that it's always there. I have allergy season. My allergies this time of year, they're not great in February. I think I have Kyler Murray allergies. I've had it for so long. I'm so done with this story. And it's just another example of an absolute failure by an owner who received the only F on the report card last week. But of course, they never do anything wrong because they're the super Cardinals, of course. So now it'll be another quarterback that'll come along and our industry will get all excited and say, this is how things change. And then free agents will come and go and some good players will be cut. And the team will be floundering along, and then they make a run, and they might beat a 49ers Seattle team once, and then it ends up being another 7-win, and then a coach gets fired. It's just the same thing, guys. This organization is Groundhog Day. Like last week when Artie Moreno, the Angels, talked about how winning is not that important to the fans. There's five more things that are more important than winning to the fans. Well, is he right? Is it? I just need a good place to park. I need a good place to go use a restroom. I need shorter concession lines. Winning? As long as we had a good time at the ballpark. You know, and we have the same owner here. We can PR wash all day long that we're the greatest, but I don't know. What is winning and losing show? We have a great facility. Like maybe Michael and Artie are related. We got a couple of owners that just, And I know Artie a little bit from when he was with the Diamond. He was a Diamondback original. So the sneaky big story in the market in our little slice of heaven this week is Phoenix Raceway. Like what? Michael Jordan. Yeah, the Michael Jordan. Not the actor Michael Jordan. The Michael Jordan. The number 23. Michael Jordan owns a NASCAR team. Co-owner of it. His driver has done something this year, the first three races of the season, that's never been done before. He's won all three. And Jordan's been at all three races. So MJ is going to be in the valley this week. MJ, and I don't know if he's going to be in the golf course laying bets. Probably, I don't know. But Tyler Reddick is a story. This is a big story, and it's big for Phoenix Raceway this week that a guy that's 3-for-3, which has never happened before, is here. And, you know, oh, by the way, Michael Jordan is his guy. So I'm very much looking forward to that. The Diamondbacks, and Spurge joins us for a couple of minutes, Jordan Spurgeon, who's been out at all the Diamondback games. By the way, if you go out to the Diamondbacks or Rockies and you're like, who is the goof that is doing the in-game stuff,
yep,
that would be you.
This guy.
The goof.
Goofing around.
Yeah, getting paid to make money. Getting paid to screw around.
Getting paid to screw around. Can't beat it.
So what is new out there? They're off for a couple of days, right?
Yeah, they'll be out for a few days. Pretty much the entire starting infield gone. A lot of outfielders gone. A lot of guys gone with the WBC coming up, exhibition games. They get to play Team Mexico tomorrow. That's going to be fun. Zach Gallen on the mound.
Where is that?
USA will be out there. What's up?
Where is that game?
Salt River Fields.
Are you going to be there?
I will be there representing. It'll be a fun time.
That's a big gig for you.
That's going to be fun. USA Baseball against the Rockies on Wednesday. That'll be fun. Poor Rockies. I'm expecting a 20 spot put on them, but we'll see. You know,
is it that bad?
It can be. Sometimes, though, the Rockies are the best spring training team in baseball. So, you know, they're in peak spring training form, and then they get into midseason form by opening day, which is, you know, get on track to lose 100 games. But they are fun in spring.
In the WBC – and Spurge, if I'm throwing you under the bus on this, I'm just being curious. So on the WBC, like the Diamondbacks play Wednesday at Hohokam, and I've been thinking about going to watch that game against the A's. If I'm going to go watch that game, I'm going to see nothing but a bunch of number 97s and 72s that are going to be in the minor leagues. I'm not going to see any of the main guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, some of them have a chance to make the roster. You're going to see a Ryan Waldschmidt play a lot more. He's their number one prospect. He went 3-for-3 yesterday. He's a guy that you're going to get to see a lot of. Jordan Lawler, you're going to see him every day now with Alec Thomas being gone. You know, in the infield, Tommy Troy, he's had a pretty good spring so far. He's a 98, but he's their number two prospect, future second baseman. So there's still plenty of excitement, but like I said, entire starting out infield gone. Alec Thomas gone. Jorge Barroza gone. A couple other guys gone. So you're not going to be seeing Perdomo and Cattell and things like that. You'll see the Pavin Smiths and some of the usual faces, but it's going to be a different Diamondbacks team for the next week or two. And with Team USA and the DR being two teams that are probably going to go pretty far in the WBC, we're not going to see some of their guys for a while.
What is going on with Merrill Kelly from an injury standpoint? Do you know?
Yeah, I was just talking down there the other day. He got some shots in his back opening day, kind of a bummer for him. He was looking forward to starting. It's not going to happen on opening day. They haven't named the opening day starter. My guess would be Ryan Nelson, unless they want to go back to Zach Gallen and kind of give him a confidence boost there if he's ready, if he's ramped up in time. But Merrill, it doesn't seem like it's going to be an IL stint. Seems like he'll be starting maybe the home opener, the fourth game of the year. When they come back from Dodger Stadium, he could be in line to start that fourth or fifth game of the season. So bummer for him to not be able to get that opening day start, but doesn't seem like he's going to miss any time or any extra starts because of that. So it just pushed it back a few days.
Who do you like so far out there? You know, you played Spurge, by the way, he got honored last year along with his other high school group because you guys were baseball studs. So your opinion matters to me. And you're out there. Who are a couple guys who are just, hey, you know what? This guy, because if I say who looks like they are going to just blow this year, it's going to be dreadful. None of us know. But right. Some guys do come in out of shape. But who are some guys that you look at and you're just like, I really like what this person is doing?
You know, a lot was said about Jordan Lawler. I know we've been hearing his name for years now. He's still so young. And seeing him in center field, being a guy that was an outfielder myself, he looks very natural out there. He's becoming that athlete. And
so he looks very much like
some guys yesterday. What was that?
He looks very much like Jordan Spurgeon.
And I would say definitely a few notches above there. But I see the fact that he's already so seamlessly fit in the outfield. I'm like, okay, he's got it figured out. And something that took me years, it sounds like it took him a month or two. So that sounds about right, honestly, with a guy like him. But honestly, look at this team and the offensive issues they could have. If he has a breakout year, that solves like 90% of them. That's how important he can be to this team. So if he lives up to that former number one prospect ranking and locks down that center field spot and you get a platoon of Alec Thomas and potentially Gurriel in left field with Corbin in right, that becomes a great outfield. And that becomes a team that is going to be one of the top three or four teams in runs again, despite losing some power they traded away last year. So if Lawler proves that he's not just a spring training and AAA merchant and can hit big league pitching consistently, That's going to be a game changer for them if he has a breakout year. So that's the guy I'm keeping an eye on. He's going to be important for them this year.
Ken Kendrick tells me every year that he and Derek have a little deal where they say to each other, "That's my guy." He's like, "Kendrick, that's my guy." And it's always somebody who's under the radar. And I would think that because Gurriel, when are we looking at Gurriel being at 100%?
He wants to go opening day. I don't think they're going to let him. I would say he's back on the field probably 2 weeks, maybe a month in, DHing a lot at first, eventually in the outfield. So they can't even keep him out of the outfield drills. I've heard some phone calls where they're like, "Hey, why is he out there?" But he wants to be out there. So he's in a contract year. That probably plays into it. So he'll be out there eventually, but he'll probably be a DH at least early on in May and June.
So when it comes – so what you're saying is Jordan Lawler could be in the same position as Jake McCarthy was last year with Alec Thomas.
Yep.
Somewhat, right?
Yep. Yep. Okay. I envision some sort of platoon. Alec's getting a lot of reps in left. There really isn't a solid fourth outfield option. Jorge Barroso is probably going to be that guy. If Ryan Waldschmidt – proves that he can hit big league pitching in spring training, maybe they give him the call and want him to be the everyday left fielder. He hasn't played in AAA yet, so that doesn't really happen very often. The D-backs don't have a track record of that. So three hard hit balls, two doubles, a single. So looks the part, but might still need some seasoning. So imagining that if Corbin Carroll were to go opening day, you would get Alec Thomas, Jordan Lawler, and Corbin Carroll in your outfield. And that would probably be the everyday outfield for at least the first month or two.
I'd be okay with that. All right, get out of here. I appreciate you, as always. Have fun this week.
Spurge. Right back at you, Brad.
Got it. Spurge there. On the other side, we're going to have John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, all things going on around the college space, because there's a ton, not just basketball, but football as well. And then Daniel the Draftnik, we, of course, are going to be out at Harrah's in April for the NFL Draft. Daniel the Draftnik, Brian Urlacher, and myself. It'll be a good time. But Daniel will be with us, his thoughts on the combine as it's wrapped up. I'm Brad Sussmat. John Wilner with us, as always. Mondays with John, nationally syndicated columnist, all things college sports, college athletics, in particular football, rights fees, Bobby Hurley's future, combine. John and I could do an hour pretty easily today, but we'll never do an hour. Well, I shouldn't say we should never do an hour. Where do you want to start? What is in your wheelhouse? What is on your mind today in the world of college sports, John?
Boy, I watched a lot of the combine. How about you? I'm willing to admit I watched it.
Yeah. I watched some, but you know, when you don't have the top players there, I wanted to see Jordan Tyson do some things just because of what goes on here in the state. You know, the Super Cardinals, as I call them, have the third overall pick, which they usually have a top five pick every year. So, you know, I was interested, but the combine is not what it once was. And this is an old man get off my lawn. It's just there's general managers that don't even go now. And if you go there, the coaches are going to say basically the same thing over and over and over. We're looking for the most talented player, the best fit, this, that, the other. Players come out, meet with the media to try to get a one-on-one. Forget it. It's, you know, they're in and they're out. So we used to go to the combine every year. And then I just started looking at it saying, you know, it's really not worth going. You didn't go, did you?
I did not go, no. But I spent a good amount of time watching it, I'll admit. And there was a lot of very fast athletes on the field. It was incredible the times that were being put up. I don't think it's, you know, the track is that much faster there than the Lucas Oil Stadium than usual. It's the same place, but they set records for the 40-yard dash times for almost every position.
I wonder why that is.
Some of it is. I think that some of the slower guys probably decided not to run. but that's a questionable strategy, you know, for them given the times that were being posted. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with some of those guys now when they have their workout, their pro days on campus. So, you know, Tyson, I think, came out of there still probably a first round pick. You know, he didn't do a whole lot. Arizona's defensive backs, they had three there.
Yeah, Genesis is pretty amazing. He's a good kid too.
They all, I think they're all going to get drafted. Trayden Stukes ran a blazing 40-yard dash. So, you know, it was a good, it was probably a good weekend for the Arizona schools.
Yeah, and in Jordan Tyson's case, I think there's going to be the question of can he stay healthy now? That's become more, that has just become more and more of a question mark, I think. And by not doing much there, he's got to turn it on his pro day, which is the strategy now by all these agents and marketing companies. It's like, look, you just need to, you don't need to really worry about East-West Shrine anymore. You don't need to worry as much about the combine. You just need to blaze when it gets right down to the end at your pro day. And so, and that's not a bad strategy, I suppose.
No, his medical tests, you know, every team comes through and they check him out and go through everything. That will be very important. He certainly has had a bunch of injuries his last few years.
John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline every Monday. Okay, over on the college basketball side, tomorrow night, Kansas is playing at Arizona State. I believe it'll be Bobby Hurley's last home game.
Yep.
Is there any way, shape, or form you could see him coming back to ASU?
No, I tried to think this through. Like, what would happen if they beat Kansas and then they, say, got to the finals of the Big 12 tournament, right? I still don't think he would come back. I think that they have made up their mind. Hurley knows they've made up their mind. He doesn't. He's at peace with it. He's looking, going to be looking elsewhere, maybe the NBA as an assistant coach. I think the situation is resolved regardless of what happens. But, you know, he has beaten Kansas twice.
Right.
So I could see them kind of rising up and beating the Jayhawks. And you know, I think he deserves to go out on top. I am pro Hurley when it comes to his tenure at ASU. You know, we've talked about the issue with the arena, but if you just compare his tenure to his predecessors, it comes out looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm. No, it's I think Bobby won't be back. There's a job that's already open that I look at and say, this is really off the radar, but knowing that Bobby really likes the West Coast, and in particular San Diego, Steve Lavin got popped over the USD. You can go sit up on top of a mountain. You can overlook Mission Bay.
Yep.
You can do things the right way. And I don't know. It's one of those jobs that when I saw, because the easy narrative, John, is, well, there's going to be a job in the Big East. It was going to be a job in the ACC, and Bobby Hurley came over here because he didn't have the resources, didn't have the commitment from the president. All that stuff is true.
Yeah.
And so you can, I think he could still do it. And then there's just, are you second, third assistant on an NBA bench and you just ride off into the sunset for a few years? I don't know. I think he's a great teacher. I myself do. I think that in this new world that he has come into, that he's recruited, had to recruit differently.
Yeah.
I'm one of those, like, U of A fans are like, please keep Bobby Hurley because we
own. Right.
Okay. That's fair, but you don't know what's being dealt. Like when U of A went into the dumper after Lute, stuff was going on down there too. It happens when you don't have an administration that has their act together.
Yep, there's no doubt. And his successor will have the benefit, in theory, of a, you know, reworked arena to recruit to. And that will be certainly a huge help for ASU going forward. But the competitive landscape in the Big 12 is just so much harder for programs like ASU and Utah and Colorado, right, than it was in the Pac-12. So I don't know which direction ASU will go. I'm sure they will take fairly big swings, but it's going to be a tough gig for whoever comes in. And you know, hopefully Hurley will have some good options. And maybe one of those options is he doesn't do anything. He just
hangs out
for a year or two.
Go sits in a studio and does his thing. And there's nothing wrong with that either. I feel like if somebody says, is that a good job in Tempe? My response usually is, well, do you have 10 minutes? Because Mirage on one side, on the other side, it is a good job. You're in the Big 12 conference.
Right.
You're in a major metropolitan area, one of the best airports in the world to get in and out of. You have Tempe, Arizona, where it was 90 degrees this last week, but people are shoveling snow or shoveling sunshine. You're in a conference where you're going to get noticed. You're going to get beat up. okay, what's the mirage? The administration on the other side of campus. Graham Rossini's fine. It's the people above him and on Central Campus that continue to keep this thing being a bleep show. That's what it is, a bleep show.
Well, yes, and is President Michael Crow's commitment to redoing the arena an indication that the basketball, men's basketball, is going to become more of a priority for them? It should. It's a great marketing tool for the university, just like football is. Time will tell, for sure. Yeah,
a commitment is one thing, John. Actually making it happen without delays, without what's behind door number four. When I talk about Arizona State as always something university, ASU, what is behind door number five? What is behind door number 10? And I sound very jaded and negative. I'm not towards the people on the athletic side, because some of the dead weight has moved on the administration side. But there's still people that have, well, this is how it's always been. And it's not people that are known by name. They're just people in certain departments. Like, we're just going to stamp this because this is how it's always been. Like, you know, and I think if you look at U of A on the other side of the coin, it is all or nothing for them. It is all or nothing. And every year it's nothing. And based on what I've seen out of them, and in particular, Koa Pete with his free throw shooting being not good at all, when it gets into NCAA playoff time and a young team with three freshmen, they're going to lose, I think.
Woo! So you're predicting an early loss for Arizona?
I'm not predicting early. I'm just predicting somewhere along the way, their youth. And when you're in big games and you're not a good free throw shooting team, now they have certain players that are. They have plenty of size. They have plenty of athleticism. They have plenty of everything. But what does the history show us of the U of A basketball? Every year, it's our year. Every year. And what happens? They play with both hands around their neck rather than bouncing the ball. And there's just some parts of that team that I feel like, good team, but when I look across the country, and they're not going to be playing in McHale, they're not going to be on their home court, they're going to be in neutral sites, they're going to be in places where there's very little. And even if the U of A, if most of Tucson goes to watch them play, it's still, you're on the road in Albany. You're on the road in Tacoma. You're on the road, wherever they're going to be. It's never going to be where they've been comfortable. And they've lost at home this year too, John.
They certainly are going to have huge expectations. I mean, this is one of the best regular seasons Arizona's ever had. And they've had a lot of good ones.
Right.
And that will kind of raise the pressure on them. I think, you know, there are some questions. I the three-point shooting, they're pretty good by percentage, but they don't shoot a lot. That could be an issue. The fact that they have three freshman starters could be an issue.
Could.
The fact that they don't have a dude, like one guy who can take over a game necessarily, could be an issue. But at the same time, those things might not. And, I would not be surprised at all if Arizona makes the Final Four. It would be the first Final Four since 2001, I believe. It's hard to imagine Arizona's got a quarter century without making the Final Four. They've got all the pieces, but they are certainly not without flaw in mm-hmm. if you project into March, because March is much different than February and January. So we'll see. It's going to be fun watching them no matter what happens. It's going to be fascinating.
How many teams does the Big 12 get in, do you think?
Well, I think given how UCF's playing, I would think that they're going to get 8 would be my guess. You kind of have the Big 6, right? With Arizona, Kansas, Houston, Texas Tech, Iowa State, mm-hmm. and BYU, even though BYU was really struggling. Mm-hmm. And then I would think that UCF probably is in a 7. Then you're in that TCU, they've come on maybe to get to 8. It's not going to be, I don't think, what the SEC and Big Ten have in terms of bid totals.
Right.
What the Big 12's got going for it is a lot of high seeds, 1s and 2 seeds, right? Arizona, Iowa State, Texas Tech, Houston, Kansas. They're all going to be pretty high seeds, all capable of making the Final Four. So it's a little bit of a top-heavy league at this point. And certainly if Texas Tech had JT Toppin, they would be, you know, a leading candidate for the Final Four. We'll see. We'll see how they do. I think that they are more quality than quantity, whereas SEC, Big Ten, I think, lean a little bit more towards the quantity over quality.
Before I get you out of here, we're talking with John Woolner, as we do every Monday. The calendar of when we're going to have recruiting dates, when we're not, how many transfers you can have, how many you can't. Is there going to come clarity on any of that here in this off season of football? Like, instead of talking, and I bring this up because I saw where the SEC folks are saying we want to have just one transfer and the date and all that.
Yeah.
John, it's a topic that wears people out, but I know that fans don't know who's on their team.
True. That's true.
That is a deal where fans would like to know who is on their team. And in this world where we have had two transfers and two periods where you could jump out and go in the portal and all that per year, do you think that that's going to have clarity before we get to next football season?
No, probably not. You know, the SEC, you know, their new ask of the system, I think it might be unreasonable because the courts could decide otherwise. There's nothing stopping a coach from going to multiple places. There's nothing from stopping a regular student from transferring a couple of times. I don't know how the courts will support the SEC's new proposal.
Right.
Unofficial proposal. We'll see. The other issues that are about the calendar, the transfer portal, the window, the future of spring practice. Is the season going to start week zero or week one? The playoff, the signing day for high school. That stuff is all interconnected. I would guess that we will not have clarity by, what are we now, March?
Mm-hmm.
By August 1st, I don't know. I know a lot of people want it, but it's so complicated, and every issue has, you know, third layer impact on other things. I just don't know how they're going to get a handle on it when everything they do ends up in court as an object of a lawsuit.
Right, right. So that's the point, is everything is going to get challenged, and so the sport is kind of stuck. You know, we went through, I was thinking about this morning, for as long as you and I have been together now, the amount of change that has gone on in the sport is amazing. But now we're in a place where some things are tied up in court. Some things are tied up in litigation. Some things are tied up where it's just not as easy as waving a magic wand, or you have a commissioner of the Big Ten saying he wants this, and the Big 12 wants that, and the SEC wants this. And now the Pac-12 is trying to rebuild itself, and the ACC commissioner is under, and it's just one thing after the next, after the next, after the next. And fans just want to see who's going to be on the field. When is our team going to play?
They do.
And do I have to have 8 streaming channels in order to find that, you know, and those are issues.
That people are watching. I mean, the TV ratings are good. Great. People are watching. But every month, it seems like something happens that kind of tests the patience of fans and constituents. So we'll see. I am not hopeful that there will be clarity. And a lot of this is also related to the playoff. We didn't even get into the future of the bowl system. And I don't know when they're going to resolve the playoff. There's now a little bit more push for a 24-team event starting in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
That will have a lot of consequences too. You got to get rid of conference championship games. It's a lot. There's a lot to it. I do know that there are a few things that everybody seems to be rallying around. And one of them is that the upcoming playoff is too long, right? The first round, I believe, is starting December 19th, and the championship game is January 25th. It's like 39 days.
Yes.
It is too long. And I think a lot of people recognize that. But how do you change that? I mean, the bowls, again, we've talked about this before. One solution is to move the quarterfinal bowls to pre-Christmas. But is the Fiesta Bowl going to want to have its game on December 20th? Probably not.
But an ESPN executive will, and they will ultimately win out over what the Fiesta Bowl wants.
Perhaps, but that's another example of how Everything is connected. And it all gets back to there's no centralized governance over the sport. It's very territorial. And we see new examples of that all the time. The white paper that the SEC and Big Ten just released about why pooling everybody's media rights would be a bad idea. Another example of territorialism. So it's kind of like college sports is in this awkward teenage phase, you know? It has been a child for 100 years. And now
they have and
trying to figure this out. And it's going to take a couple of years now with the portal and NIL and revenue sharing and potential employment. It's going to take, it may take into the early 2030s to get through this phase. And eventually a mature adult system will be formed. But right now it is just total chaos.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Have a great week. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout. Our weekly visit with Daniel, the Draft Nick. As we get into the NFL draft, we will be together on draft night along with Chicago Bear Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher out at Harrah's. And you can shoot spit wads at Daniel the Draft. No, I'm just kidding. You can shoot them at me. It's fine. It's good to see you. The combine is now not officially closed, but pretty much. And as we sit here and visit, is the top of the order, first three picks, are they pretty well defined now? Did this change anything in Daniel the Draft Nick's mind?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me. But secondly, I think the performance of Arvel Reese and Sonny Styles at the NFL Combine definitely made it more of a discussion when you kind of look at who's going to go with that number two overall pick, number one overall. Let's be honest. We all kind of know it's going to be Fernando Mendoza. You know, came in yesterday at 6'5", 236 pounds. He is a big, big quarterback. But when you look at that number two pick with the Jets, I think it's truly a big debate against David Bailey or Arvel Reese. Who are they going to go for? Bailey's the more polished pass rusher, the guy who has the production. Reese is the guy who, you know, where is he going to play? Is he going to play off ball? Is he going to play off the edge? I'm a guy who likes him more off the edge. I think, you know, he has a lot of power and a lot to be, you know, had there in the NFL, but I think it's a real big discussion. The number three, when you get to Arizona, that's where another discussion comes. Cause like Sonny Styles at three, I mean, everyone watched him worked out. Like it's a very intriguing, you know, option there, but I think Francis Malanoa, I would still kind of lean the offensive line route, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised about a, you know, Sonny Styles going three because he just looked like an alien out there, and respectfully so. I mean, 6 foot, you know, 240 pounds jumping, you know, 43 inches. Like that's just crazy stuff.
Daniel, the Draft Nick with us. Who helped themselves at the combine? A couple players you're like, Brad, coming in, I didn't know. We didn't know. This player helped themselves. And then I'll flip it around later to who hurt themselves. Let's go with who helped themselves.
Yeah, in terms of helping themselves, Ty Simpson, quarterback out of Alabama, definitely helped himself the most. Looked the most just calm quarterback out there delivering the ball yesterday. And I wrote about it before, but, you know, I don't think it's crazy. If you look at the first 8 weeks of the season, I genuinely believe that, you know, people believe that he was the best quarterback in this draft class. He was looking poised. He had confidence. He stood tall in the pocket. He delivered accurate balls all over the field. And I think he has a very strong arm. Not the strongest where you'll just kind of just see it pop, but I think in game you just see that he has a, you know, an arm to get the ball anywhere, and he just showed it against Air yesterday. He was able to truly just deliver the ball where he needed to. In terms of who else, Monroe Freeling, the offensive tackle out of Georgia, he's someone who I wouldn't call his technique and, you know, his ability to anchor and power polished yet, but he's very athletic. He popped today athletically, you know, tested well in the vertical, tested well in the broad jump, just showed those athletic traits. And when you get offensive tackles like that, it's going to take a while. He's not going to be, you know, an all-pro year one, not going to be someone who, you know, he's going to get beat a couple times. But a guy I like to refer to is Colton Miller, the left tackle of the Raiders. Coming out of UCLA 10 years ago now, he was very athletic, a guy who wasn't as polished. Year one was a struggle, and now he's been starting at that left tackle spot for the past 10 years. So I think those two are probably the two that I would definitely kind of highlight, but I think there are, so many guys that I
Yeah.
can talk about who
Sure.
definitely
Who
helped
hurt
themselves.
themselves, Daniel? Did anybody hurt themselves from Daniel the Draftnik's point of view? And they may have not have even gone out on the field at the combine, which hurt them. There's a lot of ways to skin the combine. It used to be you got to do it, you have to do it. Now you even have Josh Neider not going in the Super Bowl champs. Like, what are we doing here with the combine? Is it still relevant? It feels like it is to a certain point from a pure marketing standpoint. But this is not going to set the tone for the draft, I don't believe. I myself watching it, I don't sit here and say, oh my gosh, there's 10 game changers in the first 10, 15 picks this year. This feels like a pretty lean class.
Yeah, and I would say I wouldn't necessarily say too many people hurt themselves in terms of like their on-field performance, but like you mentioned before, off the field, Michael Trigg's a guy that really comes to my mind because his whole selling point as a tight end prospect out of Baylor is, you're 6'5", you're this athletic mismatch guy and you don't even go and run. Now, because we saw, Eli Stowers come out. He had a, he set the NFL record for, vertical jumps in the tight ends. He came out and ran a 4.5. Kenyan Sadiq was another guy whose selling point is being an athletic tight end. He came out and he broke the NFL record for tight ends running the 40 at the combine. Like that solidifies what your calling card is entering this draft. Michael Trigg's another guy who I don't think is ready to play in line in the NFL yet. I don't think he can line him up on the end of a line and go ask him to block, an edge. Go ask him to go work up to a linebacker. And to me, it's like, okay, let's go out there and let's compete. Let's show that, hey, I can run a 4.5. I can jump this. I can jump that. And you don't go do it. I just think it kind of hurts you a little bit because now, you just got to wait. Obviously, he can test for teams privately, but I just feel like he's definitely one of those guys where I felt like should have came out, competed. Like you're seeing guys like, I mean, we already talked about it, Sonny Styles. He's going to go top 10. You're seeing guys like Arvel Reese. You saw Jeremiah Love run. And I just feel like if we're seeing Jeremiah Love run, who is, a top two player in this class for me, like people should be out there running. People should be out there helping their case. And I just feel like, a lot of people just aren't doing that.
Daniel, the draft, Nick, before I get you out of here, a player here in the next few weeks, because it's going to be pro days, it's going to be individual workouts, but a player who may not have been at the combine, or they might have been, that you're looking at saying, this guy, just keep an eye on him. He's kind of in the background, or he didn't show at the combine well. Do you have a player or two that fits that category?
Yeah, I'll give one who wasn't and one who was there. One who wasn't is Cyrus Allen, the receiver out of Cincinnati. I think he had a very strong Senior Bowl, really showcased his ability to separate. I think he could play inside or outside, has really strong hands and just subtle movements running routes. Wasn't invited to the combine, so I think that's a guy you definitely want to pay attention to in this draft process. This is a very deep receiver class, and I think the combine even proved that further. He had guys like Skylar Bell showing out. Omar Cooper's probably gonna go in the first round now. You have a lot of guys in those first, 2 days that if you need a receiver in this class, you can go get. I think Cyrus Allen's a guy, out of Cincinnati who day three you definitely should be paying attention to. And then I'm gonna stay in the receiver portion. And I think Jordan Tyson out of Arizona State. We don't know what the medicals are. We don't know what it's looking like. He obviously got held out. He decided not to participate. Is he going to work at his pro day? Is he going to participate in, these team visits? Because he's a guy where I think he's the best receiver in this class. But the bottom line is if you're going to get hurt and if you get hurt in college, you're going to get hurt in the NFL. So it's just what are the medicals like? Because there's a potential we can even see him fall out of the top 20 if teams aren't, confident in what he'll bring, medically.
Daniel the draft, Nick. He'll be alongside of myself and Brian Urlacher out at Harrah's on NFL draft night. Make sure to be with us. We'll see you again next week. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And we're back with more after this timeout.